The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios. Welcome to our top stories this hour. We're going to continue our breaking news coverage. Also, we're going to talk with a young man joining me here in the studio, especially on a day like today when we're seeing how awful things can be, how bitterly accurate. I mean, we don't know the motive for the shooting in Annapolis, but it's time to start de-escalating. And around here, there's a guy who's trying to do just that. And so I'm going to talk with him in a few minutes here in the studio. But let's continue our breaking news coverage this afternoon.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
And I tell you what, this has to be bizarre for the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, where this gunman opened fire a couple of hours ago, because they are now in the position of having to report on what happened inside their building. And they are doing just that. They have just posted the first story by a Capital Gazette reporter. And so I'm going to read you most of this because it's our first real authoritative glimpse of what went down. Kevin Rector is a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, which is the parent newspaper of the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, where this mass shooting happened. But here's what they are now reporting on the Capital Gazette website. At least five people were killed and several others were gravely injured in a shooting Thursday afternoon at the Capital Gazette. A shooter's in custody, police said. Police would not name the suspect or say what type of weapon was used. County police initially confirmed about 3:15 Eastern time. They were responding to an active shooter at 888 Bestgate Road, where the newspaper's offices are located. Phil Davis, a Capital Gazette crime reporter who was in the building at the time of the shooting, said multiple people were shot as others, himself included, hid under their desks. He said there was a lone male gunman. And they're quoting him now from Twitter. Gunman shot through the glass door to the office and opened fire on multiple employees. Can't say much more and don't want to declare anyone dead, but it's bad. There's nothing more terrifying than hearing multiple people get shot while you're under your desk and then hear the gunman reload. In a subsequent interview, Davis said it was like a war zone inside the newspaper's offices, a situation that would be hard to describe for a while. I'm a police reporter. I write about this stuff, not necessarily to this extent, but shootings and death all the time. But as much as I'm going to try to articulate how traumatizing it is to be hiding under your desk, you don't know until you're there and you feel helpless. Davis said he and others were still hiding under their desks when the shooter stopped firing. I don't know why. I don't know why he stopped, he said. Police arrived and surrounded the shooter. He declined to elaborate. Authorities said police responded within a minute. And then they have quotes from a lot of the public officials that you heard live with us in the last hour's press briefing. But that's the first report from the website of the newspaper where all of this happened. Here is some audio that we are just getting in. And again, the cops' response time was amazing.
I want to commend the public safety professionals who were very quick to the scene here within about 60 seconds.
And a witness explains what he saw and heard.
So I was on the phone with a client and heard a loud noise, like an incredibly loud bang. And I poked my head around the corner of my desk so I could see out our front door into the front door of the Capital Gazette. And I saw a guy. I saw a guy holding a gun. The door of the Capital Gazette had been blown to pieces. It was in shattered pieces all on the carpet. And this guy was holding what looked like a big shotgun and moving across the entrance of the Capital Gazette office, pointing the gun deeper into the office like he was targeting people.
Keith, did that man say anything?
I have no idea. I heard some indistinct shouting after another couple minutes before there were some more gunshots, but he didn't. I mean, I only looked at him for a second, right? I ducked my head back behind the wall as soon as I saw the guy initially, but I didn't hear him say anything distinct.
As we've heard described, this is an office park where this newspaper is headquartered, and there are other professional offices, doctor's offices and the like, maybe lawyer offices in that building. So that's what you're hearing now is some of these witnesses. This person saw a woman who was hurt.
After you hid, after you tried to hide, what'd you do?
Called the police. Called the police. And they got here really fast. I mean, they got here real fast. The police were here in a couple minutes, and they checked on us in our office, made sure we were okay, and told us to just hunker down. And they, I guess, got the guy pretty quick after that.
Are all the people in your office okay?
Everyone's okay, yep.
Did you see anyone get hurt?
I did. I looked around the corner a second time, and I saw a young woman who looked like she'd been hurt. She was on the ground.
Injured?
I mean, there was a bunch of blood on the floor, so I assume so.
Did you see the shooter get shot, or did you...
No, I saw him move across the entrance of the office, and that was it.
Okay, so those are some of the first eyewitness accounts that we are hearing out of Maryland, and we'll bring you more as soon as we get more details this hour here on the Dory Monson Show. Some other breaking news that we're following locally this hour.
The Big Lead, breaking news.
Camera-seeking Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal arrested this afternoon. She's been very prominent in the protests at the detention center down at SeaTac. And Pramila Jayapal was arrested this afternoon for another protest. And we are just getting some audio from the Congresswoman in.
So I just got arrested with a group of, I don't know exactly how many, but over 500 women, at least 500 women, who took over the center of the Hart Senate building, protesting the inhumane and cruel zero tolerance policy.
Okay, and as you know, the president has said you can reunite the parents and the kids, but if we have a judge's order, we can't have kids sit in what is essentially a detention center for more than 20 days. And so they got to go back to where they came from. So I honestly don't know, other than open borders, what the Congresswoman and all of the others are protesting down there. But that's the other breaking news. Pramila Jayapal arrested this afternoon, and I'm guessing she's quite ashamed.
I'm just proud of these women who protested today, who peacefully submitted themselves for arrest, and I stand with them, and I will continue to do everything I can to get these families together again, because families do belong together, not in cages, not in prisons.
Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal arrested this afternoon. We'll keep you posted on that as well. All right, next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Amidst, you know, this tragedy back in Maryland, amidst all of the acrimony that's going on around the country and certainly throughout our region, I really want to talk to somebody who's got his sights and his vision on making things better now. Saul Spady is the grandson of the founder of Dick's Drive-In. And Saul became very prominent as this millennial voice and leader of the no head tax movement. And, of course, the city council, they passed the head tax and then they flipped on it. But now Saul has his sights on some more productive ways to move forward. And especially on a day like today, it's nice to talk with somebody who wants to move ahead in a much more productive way. So let me welcome to the studio, Saul Spady. Hey, Saul, good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you too, Dory. It's, you know, exciting time. Obviously, I've kind of returned. I was out of town for the end vote on the head tax, but we've returned to a really interesting situation in the city of Seattle, where the council reversed their vote, as well as told everyone in Seattle that they only reversed their vote because we're all too stupid to, you know, we got brainwashed, right, to disagree with this law. And now we're left in kind of a vacuum where I feel like the right choice is not to be. So I created a Facebook page, No Seattle Head Tax. Right. I don't want to be the no head tax guy. I actually was really amazed by the number of people I was blessed to meet with during that movement who were homeowners, who were renters, who were union leaders, who are small and large business owners. And what shocked me is we all have a really similar set of solutions that we want to put forward. But where our frustrations are coming is we're not seeing the council aligned with that. And so that's why I've changed my Facebook page from No Seattle Head Tax to 21st Century Seattle, because what I'd like to do is to create a place for a moderate, fiscally responsible Democrat who's also progressive to have a voice, to be able to put forward innovative 21st century solutions for our region that can take us through this crisis and help make Seattle what it really should be, that shining emerald of a city.
Yeah, and of course, the challenge is that if you're going to achieve that, which and I wish you the best. I really do. I wish you the best. But the trend line with this Seattle City Council, you got 7 council members up for re-election next year, and the trend line has been not to be that fiscally moderate Democrat progressive that you're talking about. It's to be, you know, how can I out-sawant to get elected? And that's what's driving it around here right now.
You know, and I think if we look to the council as our example of what a good politician should be, I think we'd be in a troubled spot. But that's the that's the beauty of
an impossible spot.
That's the beauty of politics. I mean, both on and I've had some really fascinating conversations with former council members. And one of the things they point out to me is, you know, they're having a hard time watching the news because at the federal level, you get this government that's just going to yell down everybody, call them names and refuse to have open discourse. And then, lo and behold, at the local level, we have about the same thing. And if you look at the council's approval ratings, they're about the same as Donald Trump. And it comes from a similar place of
which is better than Congress's, even.
Yeah, better than Congress. And it comes from a similar place of lack of listening. And we really need people who listen. We have city council members who are elected at a local district level right now. And what I think everyone should ask themselves is my council member available to me to walk in and talk about an issue in my neighborhood? And I don't believe our council members are in that place. I think many of them care about their communities, but they're not opening their doors. The number of people I've talked to in my district in you know, where Shama Sawant is a council member, it's almost impossible to get a meeting with her.
I'll give you an example. My radio show. I've gone on Twitter. I've personally invited every council member to come on my show. I know they don't like me. I know they don't like my politics, my approach to the region, but to not want to talk, I have the biggest audience and I've got a lot of listeners, and to not want to defend your positions with somebody like me who can pretty articulately critique your positions, I just think that's a foolish approach for every one of them to take, because all they want to do is talk within their own echo chamber.
Yeah, and that's not my interest. So on my Facebook page, I'm definitely going to put out the things that I believe in and the people, and I've met with a lot of people to kind of come up with these baseline pillars. But what you point out is really a pillar that if somebody goes to my Facebook page, they'll see. It's a 21st century region encourages leadership that is diverse in both background and thought. We need to be capable of sitting down with Jeff Bezos at Amazon, as well as, you know, the head of the Teamsters Union, and have, you know, a single mom who owns a home in Ballard. And I think the three of us can have a really fascinating conversation and start coming up with some core solutions to the pathway out of homelessness. And I think it's really important to use the term pathway out of homelessness, because right now, I think in the city of Seattle, we're creating an environment where you're allowed to camp on the street and be there for however long you want. And instead, what I think we need to create an environment is where we're here to encourage and give you a hand up and out of this situation. So right. If you're an addict, we should be giving you 6 months of rehab. When you come out of rehab, we should be bringing you back to Seattle, because the rehab facilities are commonly outside of Seattle. And we should give you a job paid $15 an hour picking up trash for a month. If you do a great job on that job, we'll give you a either subsidized apartment or a dorm style housing unit that's getting built, let's say, by private developers. And so now you picked up trash for a month and you get to choose your training pathway. Let's say you choose to become a union member and you get into a trade. We'll give you the training for 3 months. And then the moment that you're out of that, you'll hopefully have some money in the bank. You'll, you know, getting into a stable situation, and then you'll go and you'll go rent your own apartment.
Right.
That's a pathway out of homelessness.
I love this idea. I talked to some folks in Kansas City, and there's a privately funded for veterans who are on the street. It's a privately funded foundation. It's very similar. They will give you a place to live for 6 months but you got to get sober. You got a drug test. You got a pee test. And then you have to get into job training. And then after 6 months, they will help you transition into a life of self-sufficiency. Now, here's where I think the barrier is here, Saul. I don't think we have local politicians who want self-sufficient people. And I know that's a very cynical attitude, but I'm pretty confident in my analysis of politicians, and I don't think they want a self-sufficient people. I think if they want to be the alpha and the omega for these people, and then as long as they can control their life, they can control their vote, they can control everything. And I think you're coming at this from a good place. I'm not convinced our politicians are.
Well, and I mean, that's the question, I think, for every voter. The reason why I'm starting with Seattle is not because I don't believe this requires a regional answer. I just think the core issue of politicians that are representing their constituents is in Seattle. And that's why I'm pushing towards this 21st century solution. I think we can have 21st century Republicans, we can have 21st century Democrats, and we can have 21st century independents. But what they're going to align alongside is a core set of pillars that I think we should all carry forward in our region. We have an incredible opportunity in the city of Seattle and in King County. Our government has increased their spending by about 40% over the last 4 years. There's a lot of money that can be brought to bear here. What we need to do is look to our philanthropic region and our private industry to come up with creative solutions that work really well. And then we need to look to our leadership to really take those good solutions and put the dollars towards what's working.
We need to be results-based. We're not results-based in Seattle. Not with transportation, we're not. With human services, we're not. We're about how can we extract as much money as possible, and then we don't care, or the politicians don't care about getting results with that money. And that's the challenge. And then it goes back to, are we going to replace all seven of these council members who are up for re-election next year? Because we have to, if you're going to achieve any of what you're talking about.
For the seven council members that we have up in 2019, I have seven pillars, and I'm just going to read them off really quick, and we can let your listeners think about it.
Okay.
A 21st century region is safe for both residents and tourists. A 21st century region has a fiscally responsible government that is transparent and accountable to results. A 21st century region encourages leadership that is diverse in background and thought. A 21st century region puts forward innovative, common sense, and proactive solutions to regional problems. We provide a pathway to stability for those without a home using first-time employment, training, and educational growth. We have equitable housing and diverse transportation options that integrate technology and encourage public-private partnership, including simplified and fast zoning laws that incentivize creative solutions and private development investment for homelessness and affordable housing for individuals and families. And finally, a 21st century region provides immediate health services for mental illness and addiction.
I like it.
I'm looking for people who want to have discussions on these pillars. You may not agree with me on every one, but I promise you, as a private citizen, my door is always open. Well, I'm looking to meet with people and find solutions.
Your toughest one's going to be finding politicians who want. We have politicians who talk all the time. They're buzzwords. Welcoming, inclusive, diversity. But they don't want anybody who doesn't think like them. Diversity of thought's going to be the toughest one for you. When you're working with politicians, it's going to be easy for you. It's easy for me because I love talking to people who disagree with me. And I know that you sincerely want this. That's going to be the toughest part from a political standpoint around here.
Well, I appreciate you, Dory, taking me on. I appreciate all of your listeners who stepped up and were volunteers for the No Head Tax movement. And I really hope everybody's ready to take the next step forward and be the group talking about solutions.
I'll work with you on this with my radio show. I really will. And I like, what's the name of it? 21st Century
Seattle.
Seattle. I like the throwback of that because the World's Fair was the 21st Century Exposition. There's a little throwback to that. I like it. Saul Spady, his new group, 21st Century Seattle. Thanks for coming in, Saul.
Thanks so much, Dory.
Saul Spady with us. And I do like Saul's ideas here. So we'll stay in touch with him on that. That is your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
We're expecting another press briefing. They say coming up at the bottom of the hour, they often run a bit late, but you will hear it live here on the Dory Monson Show in Cairo Radio. This afternoon has been very busy with all the breaking news we've been covering. And I know it's a very serious day, but we also have some time to focus on some of the lighter stuff that's going on in the news around us. And so It's time to present our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, at number three, McDonald's has made a big announcement. They are going to start selling muffins, but they're only going to sell the muffin tops. And a writer on Seinfeld, Spike Feresteyn, he's the one who came up with the episode where they were suggesting that you just sell the muffin tops. And he now is saying, hey, McDonald's.
Number three.
How about a cut for me?
And I really did think at the time, well, here we go. Now we're going to have a big muffin tops craze in the United States. It never happened. It took 21 years. But when I heard McDonald's was doing it, and not just you, but every newspaper in America contacted me this morning, you know, what I thought about was the money that I'm going to make from this multinational corporation.
Right.
That's what I thought about. First, I'd like to say directly to McDonald's, you need to use the slogan. If you're going to take the Muffin Tops episode, you've got to use our slogan, which is top of the muffin, to you, exclamation point. That's the most important part of it. Secondly, you're going to have to pay me $1 billion.
Seinfeld's unbelievable. 20 years later, every single story that comes up in the news, there is a relevant Seinfeld reference.
I don't like the stumps.
So you just eat the tops?
Oh, yeah. It's the best part.
Okay, Dory, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. We want to go straight now to the live press conference from police in Maryland with the latest on this shooting.
But we do have an update for you. So with that, I'll turn it over to Anne Arundel County Executive Stephen Shue.
County Executive Steve Shue, as we reported earlier today, there's been a terrible tragedy here in Anne Arundel County. There was an active shooter incident. 5 people are dead. Several more are wounded and in the care of Anne Arundel Medical Center. The shooter is in our custody and being interrogated as we speak. I want to acknowledge the tremendous work of our public safety professionals today, particularly the Anne Arundel County Police Department, the Annapolis City Police Department, and the Anne Arundel County Sheriff's Office. They were on the scene in about 60 seconds, but beyond that, they went immediately into that building without a moment's hesitation and demonstrated incredible courage. And we are so deeply appreciative of their great work. It could have been a lot worse. Governor Hogan.
Well, I want to thank you all for being here. Obviously, our hearts go out to the victims and their families. And I just want to reiterate, County Executive Shue, it's all 3 county agencies, the city police force, county police, the sheriff's department. We have, I think, 10 different other agencies backing them up. All the state police agencies are here as well, federal partners. And it's a tragic situation, but there were some very brave people that came in and kept it from being even worse, and the response time was incredible. So that's all I have to say.
Chief Brent.
Good afternoon. I promised you guys an update.
So here you are.
Deputy Chief William Cranf, the Anne Arundel County Police Department. So the building, as we speak, is now tactically secured. And what that means is our SWAT team and our quick responders have been through the building. It is secure as far as there are no more persons in the building that are a threat to anyone else. We did recover what we thought may have been an explosive device that has been taken care of with members of the bomb squad on scene. We don't anticipate having any more explosive devices. What is happening now that you see behind me is that our criminal investigation division, the actual investigators, are now taking over the scene. We have released it to our members of the criminal investigation division so they can start the process of identifying what occurred and how it occurred and why it occurred. So the individuals in the building that were escorted out safely, they were taken to a reunification area over at the Annapolis Mall. We brought Jen Corbin in for our crisis intervention team, who's going to say a few words in a moment to talk with the witnesses, some of the victims, and the police officers who responded. At this time, we're going to continue to the investigation, and we'll have an update for you later on this evening, and I believe Ryan's going to give you a time for that. Jen?
Can you give us the numbers, please? Go ahead,
Jen. Hi, I'm Jen Corvin with Anne Arundel County Crisis Response. We have been at several different sites working with both witnesses and police officers following the incident. We will be working continuously throughout the night, both on a phone line and throughout to assist. We are mental health clinicians that will be working both with the witnesses and the officers for the next day or so. So that's what we'll be available for throughout.
Thank you, Jen. I have one more item. This area, the area of the mall, the area of Bestgate Road, is going to be closed for an indefinite amount of time. I can't tell you when it's going to reopen at this point. So if you've received calls, please let them know what occurred and why we have it shut down. The investigation is going to continue into the evening hours. And at that time, when we get more information, I will have another update for you.
Can you or the state's attorney address that? Is the suspect being cooperative? Is he answering your questions?
Yeah, I can confirm that we have the suspect in custody. They're currently interviewing him right now. The only other information that I have from questions that was asked earlier is we don't have an identification on him yet. We do know he's a white male, adult male. And the gun that was used is described as a long gun. So I don't have the specifics on that, but we do know it was a long gun. And as we continue to get information, we'll make sure that we continue to put that out. We have no information on motive. Yeah, we're still doing interviews and still doing that. He was taken into custody. He was taken into custody by officers. There was no gunfire exchanged between officers and the suspect. Since we were able to get here very quickly, and just something for you guys to know, you know, we have a unified training on how to respond to active shooters, and that's what made one of the major things that made this a huge success. So law enforcement agencies around the entire United States train the same way for these active shooters since we've had critical incidents like this. Very easy for officers to get together from other jurisdictions, link up, know the movements, the terminology that's needed to go in and effectively locate a suspect in an active shooter situation. And take care of that target inside there. So during an active shooting. Sorry, say it again. I can't answer that right now. That's something that's going to be determined by our investigators as they go through and process that crime scene. So it's going to be a very long night. We anticipate having another update at 8 o'clock. Any information that's new, I'll give out then and make sure that you guys have all that information and any updates as we go along, anything we can put out.
How many victims are in the hospital?
We can confirm that five are deceased, and we're still working on injuries for you guys to get a good number. So we're working on that, but it's estimated around three. I don't know how many were in the newsroom, but I know we have approximately 170 that we were able to safely evacuate out of that building and transport safely over to meet with family and friends over at the Annapolis Mall. 8 o'clock will be our next update. I don't have any other answers for you. Any other updates, we'll get out at 8 o'clock. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Catch him inside or outside the building? Gavin.
So just to wrap up there, they still are sticking with that number of five people killed in this. No numbers on how many injured. They have said several earlier today. They said there was no gunfire exchanged with the suspect here. That suspect now being described as a white male adult. No other information there. They are saying this was a long gun used. No specifics on what kind of long gun was used. They're still going to be there throughout the night. Dory?
Yeah, it has been, and as I said earlier, I understand why they cannot give any information or very limited information in such the early stages of an investigation. And
pretty
like this.
Incredible response there. They were saying that they were responded in 60 seconds and really just rushed right into that building. So getting some props on that. But expecting some more numbers, another update at 8 Eastern. So that'll be 5 o'clock our time.
And the other information, no gunfire exchange. So he just stopped shooting. Police surrounded him. And now they're trying to get information as to why. All right, that's the very latest. Much more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Okay, you just heard the press conference where they just weren't able to give any new information out of Maryland. Another press briefing coming up later this afternoon. Ron and Don will have you covered in your afternoon commute. So it's just, these are really sad days, and we'll, by the time we reconvene tomorrow at high noon, I'm sure we'll know a lot more about the shooter and hopefully have some idea of the motive. So throughout the afternoon, you'll get more updates from CBS and on the Ron and Don Show. Hey, here locally, I had a question for you guys. Remember when Starbucks changed their policy? They said, hey, you don't have to buy anything. Come hang out. I don't drink Starbucks. I don't hang out at Starbucks. But I'm curious if Starbucks customers, are you seeing a diff? Are you seeing more vagrants hanging out at Starbucks? Because that's what was predicted by a lot of people, myself included, that if they can't kick people out who don't buy anything, are they just going to become this magnet destination for the vagrancy problem around here? And I got an email. The reason I asked, I got an email from a listener, and I'm not going to say the location of the Starbucks because, first of all, there are multiple Starbucks in this particular city. It's a suburban city. Hey, Dory, I was just in Starbucks this afternoon. The guy in the bathroom stall was shooting up, and I witnessed an employee telling a strung-out teenager that there was no sleeping in here. OMG. And there were rampant predictions that that was going to happen. So I'm just asking the question because I do not know if this is a trend line, if this was an isolated incident that one of my listeners happened to see. But are you seeing more of that? And I'd appreciate if you'd text me or email me because we're trying to get a line on if this was a good business decision, because a lot of us predicted otherwise. And then here's another email I just got from listener Nancy. And this was so sad, too. Dory, I met my son on the Seattle waterfront to have lunch and celebrate the first day of summer last Thursday. He recently moved from Ballard to Fremont, and I took the ferry over from the peninsula. We both parked behind a building in a public pay parking area almost across the street from the Seattle Aquarium, next to the steps up to the Pike Place Market. I noticed when we got out of our cars, there was broken glass from a prior break-in there. I made sure I had nothing in view in my truck. After lunch, we came back, and the van next to me had its passenger side window broken out with glass all over. I noticed the van was from Oregon. Too bad for the out-of-town guests. It was obvious that people are lurking about, waiting to break into cars there. I will never park there again. I thought it was safe out in the daytime. We can't relax while we visit the places in Seattle anymore. And sadly, the answer is no. I do feel bad. My family and I were in Chicago when our rental van was broken into and all of our luggage was rifled through, and it's made at least one of my girls hate Chicago. Never wants to go back. And that's the way Seattle's becoming for too many out-of-towners. A couple we talked to from Michigan a few weeks ago. Okay, I got to get out of here. Ron Don coming up next. More breaking news coverage of the Maryland shooting throughout the afternoon. And I will see you tomorrow at high noon.
All right. Show's over.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.